All right. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989, and that's your God's grace. And birthday night. You know, I love it. People are getting medallions this evening for continuous sobriety. What a miracle. All the way from 1 year all the way up to 43 years of continuous sobriety. You know, it's Saturday night, 8:10 p.m. I know before God brought me to these rooms, I definitely wouldn't be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And look at this, full house. I mean, that's a miracle right there. If you're new, do the work. Plain and simple. No ands, ifs, or buts. Do the work. You know, as Angel always says, you know, if you don't do the work, you get that half-nothing sandwich. And my whole life, I would try. Oh, I'll try. Finally, my dad said, "Don't quit trying. Do it." That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is, action. You know, and if you're here, do the work, and you'll enjoy and reap the benefits. That's why I'm still here today. If it didn't work, I wouldn't be here. And for our speaker this evening, what I love is watching people in these rooms do the work. And this young, beautiful young lady is involved in service work, working with women. I see her all the time. And she always will tell you the truth. You know, I am grateful for my sponsor who told me the truth because he was right. You know, yes, the truth might hurt a little bit, but you know what? It's a great thing that it'll help you stay sober. And I watch her do service work all the time, always doing this, that, and this. Hey, you need to come to this, do that. And she has a smile on her face all the time. You know, for me, I could never laugh or smile before I got here. And it took a little while before I could start smiling. You know, and you know, I respect her and I look up to her because of the things she does. She works with women all the time. And for you new women, if you need a sponsor who tells you the truth and doesn't take any crap from you, this will be our speaker this evening. So please, a warm, warm welcome for Ann.
My goodness, there's a lot of you. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Ann. And, you know, it's funny that I would be up here speaking because let's get some things out of the way. My sobriety date is January 8th, 1991. And for that, I will forever be grateful. But before I ever got to Central, I didn't know it, but I wanted to come to Central. And what happened was, it was like maybe a couple of years before I got sober, and I remember it because something happened that made me remember. But my husband and I had been out Christmas shopping, and we were on our way back, and stopped on Colonial, and the light was red, so we were like right there in the old house. A lot of you remember when you met in the old house. And so I looked over, and there were people, you know, it was Saturday afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, and people were arriving here, and people were hugging, and there was a Christmas tree in the window, and the place was lit up, and everybody was happy to see each other, and it just looked like such a warm place. And I said, look at that, they're having a party. Let's go around the block and see if we can get a drink there. Oh, little did I know. But I will tell you, I didn't remember that until I was sober a full year, almost a full year, and I came to Central for something that a speaker, somebody was speaking in December, and I came and we arrived. I arrived out there, and I'm standing there in front. And the cars were stacked up, parked way back, and trying to move along. And I looked out and I said, oh my goodness, this is the place. This is the place I saw, and I wanted to come in and have a drink. I don't guess they'll do that. I will tell you, I came in. I did not come here to get sober. I did not come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I came in to get a lot of people off my behind. I'm going to try to clean it up. And I came here because my husband had made all the ultimatums. My children were angry at me, not liking me much anymore. And so I thought, and I'd gotten that final ultimatum, do something or else. Don't do this anymore or else. So I had come home one night. It was like 2 a.m. in the morning. And I was hoping he was asleep, that he wouldn't catch me sneaking in. And believe me, I was praying all the way home. But I was not praying to spare his feelings. I was praying for my own self because I wanted to stay in the house and I didn't want to be out in the cold. But I got home. And I thought everything was cool because the lights were all out. But when I walked in, there he was sitting in the dark. And he looked at me and he said, well, 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 you don't think much of our marriage. And I sat down on the side of the bed and I said, you know, I think I may be an alcoholic. As soon as that came out of my mouth, I looked around and said, where did that come from? I didn't mean it. I didn't, you know. But, you know, about 3 years before then, some friends of ours, and we vacationed with these people, and we were up in the North Carolina mountains, and Fred had been sober about 4.5 years at that point. And we were in an A-frame. It was late at night. My husband had gone to our room to bed. Winnie, Fred's wife, had gone to their room and gone to bed. Freddie's sitting up reading a book. And I've got one more cigarette to smoke and one more drink to drink and another story to tell. You know how we are. And I said, you know, and he's reading. He didn't want to be bothered with me. But I was not going to take that for, you know, an answer. So I got fixed another drink and I looked over and I said, well, what are you reading? And he said, I'm reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, you are? I said, I remember you said you got sober. And I said, how long's it been? And he told me exactly to the date and minute and all that. And, you know, I said, well, do you think that I drink too much? Do you think I'm an alcoholic? And you know what he did? He did exactly what it said in the big book. He did it, you know, where you read Working with Others. He told me what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for him now. And I remember, you know, so I think that kind of planted a seed. He didn't know he was making a 12-step call. I didn't know what a 12-step call was, but it planted a seed. And I think because I remembered he got out of a lot of trouble when he got sober. His marriage got back together. A lot of his financial and jail time and things like that kind of got straightened out because he got sober. So when he's telling me all this, you know what? I got angry. I got angry at his wife, and I thought, she made him do that. She made him go to AA and made him quit drinking, and I thought, boy, oh boy. So anyway, here I am sitting on the side of the bed saying I think I might be an alcoholic, not believing a word of it. And it saved me that night. And he said, well, if you think you are, you need to call somebody. And I mean today. So later that day, he was already in work when I got up. Of course, I went through the loathing and the self-hatred that I went through every morning when I got up in that situation, hungover and just not liking me at all. And I got to work, though. And I went in my office, and I closed the door, and I got the phone directory out, and I looked up the number in the phone book. It said Alcoholics Anonymous. I dialed that number, and a woman answered, and I said, yes, what would one do? And she said, what do you mean, what would one do? And I said, well, you know, what do you do? And she said, do you think you have a drinking problem? And I said, well, my husband thinks I have a drinking problem. And she laughed, too, and I thought, you bitch. You know, I did not think that was too cool, that she would laugh at that. And she said, you know, first of all, most of our friends and family see it first. And so she said, what you need to do is go to a meeting. So she told me about a meeting that was up the street from my house. It was in a treatment center and was behind the Sand Lake Hospital. And she told me about it, and then she told me it was an open meeting, explained what an open meeting was, and that somebody could go with me. So that's all I needed to hear. But when I heard treatment center, in my mind, I thought insane asylum. And I really thought, because, you know, but from the time I was like 4 years old, I knew that I was crazy. I knew that I should have been, you know, just really locked up, but I didn't want anybody to know. So I get there, and my husband comes in, and he says, well, did you make a call? And I said, yeah, I made a call. And he said, well, what'd they say? And I said, well, they told me that about a meeting near our house. And he said, okay, are you going? I said, well, they told me you have to go with me. Made sense to me. So I was not going by myself, and I was not, you know, not to a place that where the potential to lock me up was. I mean, I was sure that's what they were going to do. So from the time we start getting ready to go up there, I start crying. And I said, don't let them keep me. Just don't let them, because they will. And I was sure. I was really afraid. I was so afraid. And he said, look, you're just going to an AA meeting. Nobody's going to keep you. They don't want you. So we get up there. There was a speaker meeting. It was Friday night, a speaker meeting, and there was a cowboy from Kissimmee there. And he was kind of cute, so I didn't mind that too much. But, I don't have a clue what anybody said or... But I don't even know why, though, that they knew I was a newcomer. But when I left there, they handed me this little packet that called a newcomer packet. And they said, there's a meeting guide in there and some pamphlets you might be interested in. So I took it and I went home. And that night, before I went to sleep, I read everything in that packet. And so I knew what it was. And I thought, well, okay, they're talking about these meetings, and I guess I'll go to a meeting once a week, and that'll be the meeting I go to, and even though, then at least he can go with me. And I thought I'd be okay. And I was okay on Saturday, but by Sunday the shake started. And I was in a terrible mess. I was sick, and I was shaky, and I didn't feel good, and I was just in a mess. And he didn't know what to do with me, and he said, I think we need to take you back to a meeting. And we looked in the meeting directory. They had a little meeting guide there, and it told us about a meeting at the ODAC Club, the Pine Hills Grace Group that met at the ODAC Club. So I looked at that, and I didn't know what an ODAC was, and he didn't know what an ODAC was. But if you've ever tried to go to Pine Hills Grace Group at the ODAC Club, you can't find the place. So we were up and down Colonial looking for the place. Finally, I went in the little hotel next to it. Back then, you could walk in that hotel and feel relatively safe. And I walked in, and I asked the desk clerk, and he didn't know what an ODAC was either. So... But as we were pulling out of the parking lot, my husband saw the mailbox and said, I think it's down this way. And we went down the little path, and there it was. And the place was packed, pretty much like this place is tonight. And they were having a speaker meeting, and a woman named Rose was speaking, and a very beautiful, spiritual woman. And... But when we pulled up there, and I said, well, where are we going to park? And he said, you're getting out. You're on your own. And I said, oh, my God, well, are you going to come back for me? He said, yes, I'm just not going in there with you. So I went in, and she told some things that I remember thinking, I'm not sure I'd tell that on myself, but she did, and, you know, and I listened, and I wish I could tell you from then on I stayed sober, but it didn't happen that way. And for the next 4 months, I just couldn't stay sober. See, I only thought that I would get there and I would not drink for about 4 months. That I thought that would give everybody time to get off my behind, give me a chance to kind of catch my breath, give my body a break from all that alcohol, and then after that I'd be able to drink like a normal person. Now, I'd never drank like a normal person in my life, but I thought that would do it. And with that in mind, I couldn't not drink. I'd go 2-3 days at a time and not drink. It was during the holidays some of that time, and we'd go to parties, and I'd think, oh, look at me, I'm not drinking. And I'm watching everybody else drink, and nobody drank like I did, but I'd watch them drink, and I'd be okay that night. But 2 days later, I'd be so angry. I'd be angry that I couldn't drink, and I'd go drink. And I just couldn't not drink. That was the whole crux of the problem. I could not drink. And I could not stop drinking. So with that, I remember it was one day. It was after the first of the year. It was January 7th. And I went to a meeting at noon. And I don't think they got so far as to even get all of the how it works read. And I remember there was a woman that had seen me outside, and I was looking squirrely, and she said, are you okay? And I said, I am fine. I am just fine. And she said, let's talk after the meeting. I didn't even let the meeting get started, and I walked out of there, and I went to a bar. And I stayed in that bar, and I drank myself silly. And, in fact, I drank until I passed out, blacked out, came to, and started over again. So that was, you can imagine how bad it got that day. And I did things that day that I hadn't done before in bars, and did things that I'm really pretty ashamed of. And I went home, and that night he wasn't awake. And somewhere along the line, he had decided if I was still going to those meetings, he would put up with it and see what happened. But I came home that night, and I just kind of fell in the bed. And the next morning when I woke up, and I was really, it was the worst time I think I'd ever felt, and I hated me. I hated my life. I hated everything about me. And then it hit me. I am exactly what the people in Alcoholics Anonymous are talking about. I am that person that cannot take the first drink and quit. I just can't not drink. I cannot even go 3 or 4 months because even with an honest desire, and I wanted to quit. I really didn't want to drink for that period of time. So with that, I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I've got to do something. I went on to work, and I went to a meeting that night, and it was a meeting that, wonderful meeting. It was, I don't know if some of you remember Curtis McTurner, who taught Big Book, and a lot of people did their fourth step. He did a fourth step seminar, and he was wonderful. But he was leading the Big Book study, and when I got there, and he looked at me, and he said, are you okay? And I said, I was honest. First time I'd ever been honest, and I thought this was going to, you know, the walls would fall down. And he said, are you okay? And I said, no. I was drunk again last night. And he said, well, I'm glad you're at this meeting and you just keep coming back and one day you'll be sitting in the right chair. Now, are there any bikers in the room? Yay, bikers. That night at that meeting, there were some guys from the 5th chapter over in Daytona had come, decided to be in the meeting with us that night. And some of those guys had some long-term sobriety, like 12 years, 9 years. You know, I thought that was an eternity to not drink. And it was very exciting to me to listen to them. But they talked about what they did every day on a daily basis to not drink one day at a time. They talked about when they got up in the morning, they first thanked God for waking them up and for giving them a good night's sleep. And they asked God to keep them sober that day. And they asked that they might live a sober life and be of use to and be of service to another person. And they talked about when they got to work and when someone of them had a real pressure job. And he said when things didn't go well and he was not sure what to do, he would excuse himself and go in the men's room and get on his knees again. And he'd pray. And he'd ask God and he'd start his day over. And he talked about if he needed to make an amend to somebody, if he did something or said something that was offensive, he'd go do that again, go through the thing again, and he'd go and he'd apologize immediately. They talked about they'd go to the meetings every day, and they talked about at night when they'd go to bed, they'd go over their day to see if they missed anything, see if they had done anybody any harm or done anything that they needed to make an amend for. And if they did, they immediately made their amends. And they would go to sleep and have a good night's sleep. And I listened to this and I thought, oh my God, it can't be any more difficult or any easier for them to do this than it would be for me. So I think I'm going to try to do what they are talking about doing. So I went home that night and I told Neil, this is what I'm going to do. I said, first of all, it's going to look kind of strange, some of the things I'm doing. He said, you look strange no matter what you've done. So, it was okay. And that night, I was totally exhausted from the night before. I was still totally exhausted. But that night, I picked up a book. By then, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I was still drinking, I had every self-help book there was ever written. And when I was trying to not drink for that 3 or 4 months in there, I had bought every book that you had that was for sale at the Pine Hills Praise Group. I had a big book. I had a 12 and 12. I had daily reflections. I had one day at a time. I had Chuck C's, a new pair of glasses, and several others that, you know, and I had a stack of books. So I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read some tonight, and then I'm going to do what the guys talked about doing. So I read a little bit, and I kind of snuggled down in bed. And before I could even start to pray, I was asleep. You know, that thing about prayer, I will tell you, when I was coming into the rooms, and these were prayers I'd heard all my life, you know, the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. But those prayers would stick right here, and I would never be able to say them. So I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I was going to try it. But anyway, I went to sleep that night. The next morning, I got up and took a book down again and decided I would read. And I read, and I'm not even sure what I read that morning. But I sat there on the side of the bed, and I bowed my head, and I thought I was going to pray. And I heard a voice. And the voice said, get on your knees. And I didn't obey. I said, oh, you can pray anywhere. And I bowed my head again. And then I heard that voice again, loud and clear. And it said, Ann, get on your knees. And I did. And I got on my knees that morning. And my prayer was just one of, I don't know, God, even how to pray. I know that I had felt abandoned by God. I know that they tell me that, I abandoned you, that you didn't abandon me. And I earnestly prayed that morning. And there on my knees, I believe that I did the first three steps, as outlined in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that my life was unmanageable as long as I was powerless over alcohol. And I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That, for me, was hope. Because, you see, I thought I was crazy from the time I was 4 years old. What had happened to me when I was 4 years old are some things that should not happen to little girls. I was abused. I was abused mentally and physically and sexually. And from that time on, I just knew I was crazy. That's all I knew. I knew that this shouldn't be happening. I knew that my life was a shambles. Then by the time I was like 10 years old, it got worse. At 10, I started developing and I started hating my body. I thought my body had even turned against me. So I even hated myself even more. And I hated myself, and I just knew I was crazy. I knew that nobody else in the world felt those thoughts. And then by the time, you know, I was like 13, 14, and we had Youth Week at church. At Youth Week at church, we had a little card that was we were supposed to sign, a little pledge card. And it said, I will not smoke cigarettes. I will not drink alcohol. And I will not have sex before marriage. And then we were supposed to sign it, date it, and walk it up to the altar and put it there. I looked at that card and I said, oh my God, I've already done 2 out of 3. And I said, how do I lie in church? Because everybody in this church knows me. Everybody's going to know. And I can't just not do this. I was a gutless wonder. I would have told you I wasn't afraid of anybody, but I was afraid of everybody, you see. I was afraid. I didn't want anybody to know about me. I didn't want anybody to know how crazy I was. But I signed that card and I turned it in, and from that time on, I thought, you know, I am condemned to hell from here. But on that morning, when I got on my knees, all that was washed away, you see. All of that. And I will tell you, I was very blessed. Blessed in the fact that the desire to drink was lifted from me. And I haven't had to have a drink since January 8th of 1991. That is a wonderful thing. My life had, I had already my family... I had, you know, I was a baby of 7 children, and when things happened in our family, when our father died, everybody went into survivor mode, and I thought I was the most abandoned one. They all seemed to have each other, but they didn't have me, you know, and I just kind of felt abandoned by the family, so I treated myself and them as though I was abandoned from the family. And so I'd quit talking to most of them, quit that. Well, it had been a long time since anybody had invited me to a family function. So that's just the way it was. I had gone away to school when I graduated from high school. I went to school in Fort Lauderdale. I met and married my first husband, a nice guy. He just was a lot like me, liked to drink a lot. And he didn't mind if I drank. And he was the kind of guy that I often say I married the man of my mother's dreams, because he was exactly what she had told me I should look for. His family had a lot of old money, you know, and that was what I should look for. And that's what I found. But we were compatible, I thought, as long as we were drinking. Well, then I got pregnant with our oldest son, and you know, gee, I wasn't as much fun anymore because I didn't drink when I was pregnant. I didn't drink or smoke cigarettes. I'm taking care of the baby already. And 2 years later, we were getting ready to separate, and same thing happened. I got pregnant again. And so we stayed together a little while longer. And when we split, my children were young, and I thought, well, now I can do whatever I want to do. And I will tell you, what I wanted to do was find a job, settle down, and just be my own person. We moved like 18 times in 2 years. That's a lot of moving. And I changed jobs probably, I think, I tried to count them all up. And I was trying to go back through some tax records and find out how many jobs I'd had. But it was always an improved on my jobs. You know, it was an improvement. I could always talk somebody into hiring me. And so at any rate, I came to settle in Orlando, and I stayed here. I decided what I wanted in a man was something different than what my mother had wanted for me. And so I started dating married men. I had a lot of husbands, but only two of them were mine. And, you know, that's not something I'm bragging about or I'm proud of. But when I met my current husband, he was married too. And I will tell you, I felt ashamed about that. And, you know, we were married 10 years when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will tell you, I felt ashamed and upset about that. And about when I was about 8 years sober, a dear Al-Anon woman said to me, "Ann, take the red S off your chest. This is not a flash in the pan. For whatever reason, you are together with him. And as long as you stay with him, then he is your husband, and you do not need to feel guilty anymore. And thank you for that." I am really glad we got here. I will tell you that I thought life would be wonderful, that I wouldn't have any more problems. Life has a way of just happening, doesn't it? But I will tell you, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book tells us that we walk shoulder to shoulder through life with each other. I had a brother that he was my tormentor. And I will tell you that I didn't think that I'd ever be able to get beyond that I'd ever be able to get over the fear and the hatred and everything that went along with that. But I will tell you, through a lot of prayer and he got sick. He got real physically sick. And I went to his hospital room, and I was able to confront him. And I was able to tell him, you know, you did a lot of hurtful things. I am sorry that you're sick. I do not want you to die. But I do want you to know that, you know, what happened was a very sick thing. And, you know, I was able to get beyond it for me. And I was able to be there for his family. He had a wife and a family when he died, and I was able to be there. And I didn't feel that I had to go in and make his funeral all about me. And for that, I'm grateful. But through all of this, my sponsor was there with me, and helping me, and talking to me, and giving me strength and hope. Then 6 weeks later, a brother that I was very close to, he and I had been drinking buddies, he and I had been very close, except when I got sober, he told everybody I wasn't going to be any fun anymore, and it hurt me. But you know what? Through the years, he had learned to respect that, and he was happy. And when he dropped dead in a bar in Dallas, Texas, and I got the call, And he died of chronic alcoholism. And I had to get on a plane and go out there and bury my brother. When I got out there, and we're not Catholic, but he had converted to Catholicism a couple of years before. And his priest told me that he was very happy that his sister was sober. And he had left everything to me. By all rights, I shouldn't have been the one he left everything to. I'm the youngest of the family. I'm not the oldest. But he said, because she will do what is right, she will do what I know I would want her to do. And I tried to the best of my ability to do that. So, you know, and through all of that, you know, then I find out and thought I was out there by myself. And I'm calling back here to everybody I knew and talking to them. And his best friends had dinner at their restaurant after the funeral. And I'm sitting next to the priest and we're talking. And he said something and I answered something back. And I said, well, all we have is one day at a time. And he said something about thank God that we do have one day at a time. And, you know, we're just back and forth. And I said, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And he said, I know, and I've been sober for 22 years. So, you see, I wasn't even alone out there. And that this program gave that to me. It wouldn't have happened any other way except that this program gave that to me. I was not alone. We aren't alone in any of this. Right now I'm a little sad. The same person's been my sponsor for, let's see, almost 15 years now. And she's very ill. She has a brain tumor. And they just found out that it is malignant. And she's coming back home from Duke University, and she's coming back home, and she has opted not to have any chemo or anything, but she's coming home. And, you know, my job right now is to be of service to her family and to her as much as I can. Somebody asked me the other day, where I was at breakfast with some alcoholics, and one of them said, what would Ramona want you to do? I said, she'd tell me to go find a newcomer and work with a newcomer. She would tell me to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she'd tell me to live life large, because that's what we do. I'm really happy to be here. Really glad that you are here, because I feel like each and every one of you are just here for me. And I know that's not true, but that's okay. If anybody has not been told today that you're loved, consider that done right now, because I do love you. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for allowing me to talk.
Thank you. Thank you for carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous.